out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 14th of February. It's Valentine's Day. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. And of course, since it's Wednesday, we're joined by Billy Roper of the Shieldwall Network and the Roper Report, which you can hear later on today at Radio Arian. Billy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Sven. Thank you for having me on again. I look forward to discussing the origins of Valentine's Day and perhaps helping out our listeners with a little relationship advice as well.
Yeah, I think we've got, it's a very topical subject for today since it is Valentine's Day. We thought we'd talk a little bit about Valentine's Day. And I've been digging around trying to find information about the origins of it. And I've got, apparently there were three different Valentines and they've managed to narrow it down to one of them. And this St. Valentine was a Roman priest living in the year 269 AD under the Emperor Claudius II. And Claudius II was persecuting the church at that particular time. There was quite a lot of persecution of the Christians, as we're well aware of, and lots of marches. And one of the measures that he took was an edict that prohibited the marriage of young people. And this was apparently based on the hypothesis that unmarried soldiers fought better than married soldiers, because married soldiers might be afraid of what might happen to them or their wives or their families if they died. And we must bear in mind that it was a very permissive society at the time in which Valentine lived. Polygamy was just taken for granted, and it was much more popular back then than just one man and one woman living together. Yet some of the people in Rome seemed to be attracted to the Christian faith. And obviously the church thought that marriage was very sacred between one man and one woman for life, and that it was to be encouraged. So it immediately presented this problem to the Christian church of what they could do about this. And right. The idea of encouraging people to marry within the Christian church is what St. Valentine was about. And he secretly married people because of this edict, because it was against the law. And eventually he was caught, he was imprisoned and tortured for performing marriage ceremonies against the command of Emperor Claudius II. And there are lots of legends surrounding his actions while he was in prison, lots of miracles, and he gave sight to the blind and converted other people to Christianity. And one of the men who was to judge him in line with the Roman law at the time was a man called Asterius, and his daughter was blind. And he was supposed to have prayed with Asterius and healed the young girl with such an astonishing effect that Asterius himself became Christian as a result. And in the year 269 AD, Valentine was sentenced to a three-part execution of first a beating, second a stoning, and finally decapitation, all because of his stand for Christian marriage. And the story goes that the last words he wrote were in a note to Asterius's daughter. And he said at the end of the note, "From your Valentine." And apparently that's where the wording of "from your Valentine to my Valentine" on Valentine's Day comes from. And before I hand it over to you, Billy, I'll just it's just one thing that this brings up to me before we go into the romantic aspect of it, where it's saying about how the emperor thought that people who just got married wouldn't fight properly, so he didn't want them to get married. There was actually a law in the Old Testament for the Israelites, and anyone that had got married didn't have to fight for a year. They didn't have to be called up for the army for a year. And the reason for that was because they would be unprepared to lay down their lives in battle, because they would have too much, you know, they'd be too much in love to wish to die and to give themselves up for their nation. And I think that, because I read this in Flavius Josephus, and I would imagine that that was the same for all white nations, that anybody that got married didn't have to serve in the army for a year. So I think that's probably more likely what was actually going on at this time. He didn't want people getting married because the law would have been, if they had got married, they didn't have to fight. And he probably wanted lots of fighting to be going on. But that's sort of quite...
Exactly.
Yeah, it's different to the romantic side of it. What are your thoughts on St. Valentine, Billy?
Well, you're right that Flavius Josephus did write about that. And in pre-industrial civilization in Western Europe, that year off from fighting or from social responsibilities was shortened into a month off after you were married. And that's where we get the term honeymoon from. The honeymoon would be the first month after marriage when a man was encouraged to actually get his wife pregnant and to focus on starting his family, not any kind of business affairs, and certainly not serving the military, which is probably why here in the U.S., we have the draft, which begins at the age of 17, if you think about recent wars, so that we hopefully will draft young men who have not yet started families before they actually go to war, but the officer class are older and already have. But as far as the main focus of relationships and what the proper approach to marriage and love and romance should be, I just wanted to clarify that, you know, you and I are not here today to necessarily purity spiral against those who have had imperfect lives. I myself, you know, I've gone through 3 divorces and am on my 4th marriage. So I'm not going to be criticizing those who were not able to have the ideal beginning to their romantic lives that we'll talk about here in a minute. But that having been said, you know, you wouldn't want to get advice about drinking from someone who never had. You'd prefer to hear it from an alcoholic. And so I think that I'm well placed to give romantic and relationship advice because of my experience, both positive and negative, you know, as are you. But yeah, absolutely. This is not a pagan holiday, as some Christian identists and some mainstream Christians would say. They think that everything is evil and satanic. It's not, obviously. As you point out, it has its origins in our faith and in our people. And I think that there's some very real important moral lessons that we can learn about relationships and romance by discussing the ideal for our people.
Definitely, definitely. We'll get into that a little bit later on. But that's what it is the ideal. We've got to hold to these ideals of purity, chastity, celibacy. You know, that they're good things. They're not bad things that we should be embarrassed of or ashamed of or choose to ignore. Just because, I mean, me and you, I mean, we could hardly say that we're celibate or chaste, you know, at our age. But we do have young listeners, and, you know, it'd be good if young listeners could not make the same mistakes that me and you have made in our lives, Billy. You know, that if I could just do that for some people, that would make me happy. But just to get back to this, I mean, this St. Valentine's, you say it's not a pagan holiday. There are more than a few relics to prove his existence. I mean, that's what these relics do. They prove that this man actually lived, because we still have parts of him that are still here. Regardless of any of the honouring that goes around these relics, they are actually proof that the man that's being talked about is there. And many of the current legends that we have, that characterise St. Valentine, they were invented in the 14th century in England, notably by Geoffrey Chaucer and his circle, and that's when the feast day of February the 14th first became associated with romantic love. Before then, it was just St. Valentine's Day who was decapitated. And during the Middle Ages, it was believed that the birds paired in mid-February, and this was then associated with the romance of Valentine. And although lots of these legends differ, Valentine's Day has always been recognised as a day for romance and devotion. But I would say that not so much romance, but marriage, because the whole romantic ideal that we have today has been given to us by Hollywood, that the Prince Charming is going to come in and he's going to whisk the girl off her feet, and he's going to treat her to everything, and he's going to be this super duper alpha male, and he's going to do everything for her. And she's going to be totally and utterly in love with him, and she'll be utterly in love all the way through till the end of her life. And that just isn't true. And young girls, they see that, and they find someone that they really like, they marry them, and as soon as they think, oh, I'm not really enjoying this, that's it. They're encouraged to go and get divorced. Their friends will be saying, well, if you're not happy anymore, then you should just leave. And it's totally round the opposite way that it should be, because right the way through our history, we had arranged marriage. The girl wouldn't see the boy until they may see them a little bit when they were kids, and then they wouldn't see them for years. And then eventually they would get married. And if they were lucky, they would then fall in love. And the falling in love bit and the romance would come after they had got married, after a few years. And there was never any idea that they would ever be divorced. They would always be together. And because when you put the man and a woman together and they are sleeping together and they have children, the chances are they're going to fall in love with one another anyway. So it was completely the opposite way around. And anybody that actually did marry for romance was looked down upon. That was called marrying for lust. That was base. That was what the, you know, that was what the extreme lowest of the lowest classes indulged in, was marrying for lust, because it was seen as to honor your mother and your father was to marry who they told you to marry. And sometimes there would be like intermarriages between royalty. This is why royalty was never supposed to marry outside of royalty. And this is really the last traces of it that we have today was probably in the last century, where they said that the monarchy could only marry other royalty. And of course they've even changed that now. But that used to be the same for everyone. Used to all be arranged marriage. There was never any chance of any divorce. The children always knew that they were going to be growing up, their home wasn't going to be broken. They had a solid foundation that they were going to be brought up on. And now we have all this promotion of romance, and instead of marriage for life, we've got people that have multiple partners, and it's really hard on the children, and it's hard on the man and the woman. They're not happy. The man's not happy because he can't trust his wife. The wife isn't happy because she's measuring him up to other people. And this goes back to the Bible. It says the woman is the helpmeet, and she needs to obey her husband, and she will only have eyes for her husband as well. That's what it says in the Bible. The first love of the woman is who she should marry, because she will then stay with him. This is why they wouldn't allow the woman to see other young lads or boys or men until she saw her husband. So she would set eyes upon him, she would instantly fall in love with him, because she hadn't really seen a man before apart from her father. That was the way that it was set up, and that was the way that guaranteed that there was no divorce. It's amazing how things have just turned from one end right to the opposite, I think, Billy.
And purposefully, not accidentally, you know, our society and our culture has been undermined by our Jews' enemies. And so our Jews have created this Hollywood-driven idea of romance. As you say, the traditional, natural, organic way of doing things was through arranged marriages. And that, I'm sure that even some racially conscious women are shrieking listening to us saying this, but it's reality. It's historical truth. And it's what actually created a healthy, organic society and civilization. Because, you know, let's be honest, you know, St. John the Baptist and St. Valentine were not the last guys to lose their heads over a pretty girl. And, you know, Salome is not the last girl who was able to twist a guy. But the way to keep that from happening and to make sure that men are loyal to women, which is what women complain about often, and to make sure that women are loyal to men, which is what we legitimately complain about, is to make sure that they are bonded together at a young age, preferably while both of them are still virgins, so that bond that's created through having children together and building a life together is what creates real love, true love, not just some temporary lust which fades with time.
And that's what's advertised on the television all the time. They just encourage people to sleep with as many partners as possible. It's just taken for granted that people are going to sleep together. And when I was a young lad, there was a hell of a lot of pressure to lose your virginity. I guess the same thing goes on today. But when you actually listen to what kids say when they're apart from the other kids that are around them, then they say they have respect for virginity. I mean, I've got some statistics here that just prove out everything that we're saying. I've got the first lot come from YouGov statistics in the UK. They say that 64% who married their first love are still in love, while only 56% who married someone else are. Only 19% of people in first love marriages have ever considered leaving their partner. And that compares to a third, 34% of married people who have loved before that consider leaving their partner. And people who married their first love are also more likely, 97%, to think that they will be with their partner until their dying day than the people who did not marry their first love. That's 88%. And that's YouGov statistics, and I would say they're probably weighted to try and show that people shouldn't marry their first loves, because that's the British government. I've also got Institute for Family Studies statistics in America. They say women with between zero and one sexual partner are the least likely to divorce later on, with women who had 10 or more partners most unlikely to see their marriages through until the end. In the 1980s, slightly over half of women had a maximum of one sex partner before walking down the aisle. But things look very different at the start of the new millennium. By 2010, only 5% of new brides were virgins. So just between the 80s to 2010, it's gone from half of women were virgins to now it's only 5%. At the other end of the distribution, the number of future wives who had 10 or more sex partners increased from 2% in the 70s to 14% in the 2000s, and then to 18% in the 2010s. 11% of virgin marriages, on the part of the women at least, in the 1980s dissolved within 5 years, and this number fell to 8% in the 1990s, then fell again to 6% in the 2000s. So that's it's 11% and below that ends in divorce if people are getting married when they're virgin. And for all three decades, the women with the lowest 5-year divorce rates are those who had only one partner prior to marriage. And that's talking about, they're talking about having two sexual partners there, between zero and one. So that's not even all virgins. I would say that if it was just statistics that were based on the boy and the girl being virgins, then it would be 90% success rate, 95% success rate. And it's so sad that isn't explained to young people. And the final statistics that I've got here are on teens, and these are from 2017. This is from the Statistic Brain Research Institute. They say that 58% of teens agree that sexual activity for high school age teens is not acceptable. 82% of these teens desire to have only one partner for life. 80% of the girls who have had sexual intercourse said they wish they had waited. And 87% of teens do not think it is embarrassing to admit being a virgin. And I think that tells something different to what most teens think, because they think it's embarrassing to say that you're a virgin, and you want to lose it as, you know, as young as you are. So you can say, oh, I'm a man, I've lost my virginity. And yet when you get kids on their own and talk to them, they think that, no, you shouldn't lose your virginity at a young age. You should save it. And I really think people should, because if they did, they would end up being so much happier once they are older and once they are married, Billy. What are your thoughts on it?
I agree completely. Your stats prove that the trends are increasing in our favor, away from degeneracy and towards trad, what they call trad, traditional values, traditional returns to monogamy and marriage being defined as one man and one woman for life. We are winning. We're winning at the young people's age level. What Generation Z, those teenagers you cited, are doing is pointing out that they want lifelong love with the opposite sex as God intended. And there are some voices that are going counter to that. You know, Sacco Vandal wrote last week an article where he went full Andrew Anglin, suggesting that the problem in our society was a disproportionate number of women to men, and that we should solve that by importing non-white women or by conquering non-white lands and taking non-white war brides and bring them back. But on the other hand, the majority of people are agreeing with you and I, especially young people, more importantly, that we need to return to traditional values. And, you know, obviously, this is what's healthy for our society and for our culture, and it's what indeed makes happy couples. People are not constantly worried if, you know, a lady doesn't have to worry about whether she begins to get a few gray hairs and wrinkles if her husband's going to leave her for a younger model. And a guy doesn't have to worry if when he leaves to go to work, you know, the lady is going to be having over company that she shouldn't have. This unnatural, Hollywood-driven idea of romance is really negative for our people. And coming back away from it towards traditional values, I think, is a very healthy thing for all involved. So we want to make sure that all of our listeners understand that what we're promoting is a return to traditional, healthy, white, Aryan values, where we accept that we basically need to follow nature and God's nature and His laws, that marriages can be and should be actually arranged for the best interest of our kids. Now, you know, I'm a father of a daughter, and I can tell you that when she began to be a teenager, I felt that very powerfully, that I wanted to meet every young man that she even mentioned or showed any interest in, to vet them very hard, you know. And it's almost a cliche that the guy, you know, wants to come and see the girl, and then, you know, the father is going to be there cleaning his gun when he showed up. But in reality, it's because it's based on a father's natural worry and concern about his offspring. And one thing I'd like to add is that you and I have discussed, and I've written about telogeny. Telogeny is a biological fact. Actually, when a woman has a male sexual partner, she absorbs some of his genetic material, and she passes that new genetic material that she absorbs from her first and second sexual partners onto her children. So actually, if a man wants to make sure that his children are most like himself and has his genetic material, it is in his best interest to have a virgin wife. And that's why even the firstborn son is often chosen as the heir to thrones, because that's an expression and admission of the science of telogeny. So it's important that we encourage these traditional values for our young people, but it sounds like they're waking up already on their own to the most important aspects of them.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, it is encouraging statistics to see there. You know, I was really pleasantly surprised to see that these teens were holding virginity with respect like that. And you bring up a good point there about war brides and I mean, that's basically talking about sleeping around. Oh, it doesn't matter because they're a different race. They're war booty, so we can sleep with them. Well, it's this sleeping around that leads to these divorces. Even if you're single at the time, if you sleep with lots of women, you're not going to be able to stick with just one woman. And that's the worst thing that there can be for children. They need to have a stable home with a stable foundation that they know isn't going to fall apart around their ears. And then they become decent, upstanding members of society, and they go on to have respect for sex, and they end up getting married and sticking together and repeating the cycle. And that's the way that it should be. It's not enough to say, well, we don't have enough white kids, so I'm going to sleep with as many women as I can and have as many white kids as I can. Because you're not going to be there to bring those kids up. And the chances are that they're going to grow up without a father there. They're then not going to have the male influence on them. They're not going to learn self-sacrifice. They're not going to learn to save themselves for the future. They're not going to learn to behave themselves. They're not going to be disciplined. They're not going to learn self-discipline. All these things they're not going to have because they haven't got a father there. And instead, there's going to be a trail of different men going through the home who are only interested in one thing from the kid's mother. And it's totally going to mess that kid's head up. And he's going to end up just like all those men that pass through the home. Half of him is going to be like that. And the other half of him is going to be the biological half that comes from his father. So he's going to be in confusion all the time. He's certainly not going to be brought out to his optimum potential. And it's the same for any girls that are brought up without the father there. They have to have the father there. It's no good just saying, I'm going to produce lots of children. It's far better to stick with one woman and just have a few children instead of having lots of little bastards running around. It's so important that we bring up the next generation of kids to have these values and traditional values, because, you know, these statistics are telling us that they want to have these values. But the problem is, if they haven't actually grown up in a home that has those, with the mother and the father there, then they're already starting out with obstacles being put in their way. You know, they can want these things as much as they like, but the actual ability to do it is not going to be so much as if they had grown up in a stable home, I think is what I'm trying to say, Billy.
Exactly. You're so right that broken homes do screw up psychologically both little boys and little girls, so that little boys have a view of women as being something to either resent or something that's devalued and debased and objectified. And, you know, I can actually agree with the lady's point of view there, because they're right to a point. that we don't want women to be objectified. And in a natural, healthy relationship, women are not. They're valued and cherished as partners and not just treated as a commodity with only one value in a relationship. On the contrary, they are a necessary equal half, not only for the relationship, but for the family unit and for the society and civilization. I think that in the future, when we have control of our destiny once again as a people, it'll be our responsibility and our duty to elevate women back to their original traditional role as helpmates and as partners in a solid lifelong marriage partnership with one man, and to make sure that men are elevated equally with their duty and responsibility as protectors and providers and defenders of the family and the society and the civilization as a whole. And I'll be more organic and happy for everyone. And getting there, of course, will require that men and women revert back to their traditional, healthy, organic, natural roles. And that will be that, you know, guys, remember that when you think that there's not any racially conscious white nationalist women left and you're having a hard time not being lonely and you want to go to a non-white woman because they're quote-unquote more submissive or whatever, remember that our women always naturally follow our lead. And if we return to our natural and healthy duty and responsibility as white men, if we behave as white men should, as conquerors and as victors, and stop stepping off the sidewalk for the invaders and non-whites who are taking our countries away from us, then our women will have respect for us again. And they will come back to us because they will see us as being the alpha males. And that's what women are attracted to. So if we want to be winners, if we want to have women, then we need to behave as winners and behave as white men naturally should psychologically. And we'll see that women will respond. Our women will respond and behave as white women naturally should psychologically. But until men do, because men have to be the leaders of society, we have to set that example. We have to lead the way and women will follow. It's our responsibility and our duty first to provide that example, because women will not respect losers and beta males, and they shouldn't. It's our responsibility to make sure that we are the alpha males that our women need us to be. But once we have control of that society, once again, it's important that we return to these organic relationships. If they include arranged marriages, I think they'll be a lot healthier and better for the civilization, society as a whole.
I definitely would. I'm not expecting us to be able to change things tomorrow and go back to that. But it's very important that we understand that was the ideal. And when we had that, there was no such thing as divorce. Children never knew what a broken home was. The father always knew that when he came home from work, the supper would be cooking, the kids would be there ready to see him, the place would be tidy, and the woman's realm was in the home, that was all hers, she was the boss, and the man's realm was in the public sphere, and the woman would teach the children. And whenever any young man did anything incredible or amazing, people would always say, well, I bet he had a good mother. They would always say that he must have had, it's his mother that can be credited with that, because it's the mother that brought the children up, while the man went out and brought home the bacon, basically brought home the money and protected the woman. And again, and where the women like to have, they like to have material possessions, that inspires the man to go out and earn more and work harder so that he can provide for his wife, so that she can decorate the house and make it look good. And, you know, men and women have different talents, and the best way for those talents to work together is for the woman to obey the husband and the man to be under God and obey God's laws, and for the children to obey the mother. And each gender has got their own realm then. The man has got where he goes out to work. He's the one that has the final say. And the woman's realm is in the home, and she looks after the children, and that's her realm. And you have to have somebody that has the final say. Otherwise, you will just have continual arguments. You have to have the man with the final say. The woman defers to him. If it goes wrong, it's then his fault. But there'll be no more arguing. He has to have the final say, and the woman has to back him. You know, the man needs the woman there to give him his power by deferring to him. And this Valentine's Day, I just hope that all the people that are happily married, that the husbands are treating their wives well, and they've gotten something special today, because women have to have that little bit of romance in their lives, and this is a good excuse for it. And it should be within marriage. It shouldn't be about sleeping around and having as many multiple partners as they can. Lily, I don't know if you want to add something else before we finish. We've got 2 minutes to go.
I just briefly wanted to remind everyone who's listening, whether male or female, that men and women are not enemies. Our enemies want to make us into adversaries, but in fact, there are no more natural allies for white men than white women, and the reverse is true as well. We need to bring that back. We need to make sure that white men do not resent and are angry at and hate white women, and we make sure that white women know that we white men are going to step up to the plate, take the responsibility and duty that God gave us into our hands, and be their defenders, be their protectors, be their saviors, and to protect their civilization, their society, so that they feel safe and they can trust us once again to be the providers and defenders that we were born and made to be. And if we fulfill that responsibility for them, then they will become natural white women and fulfill the responsibility they have to us.
Amen to that, Billy. Thank you very much for coming on today. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Johnson. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. God bless and hail victory.